we haven't talked a lot about it this morning, but a horrible moment, a near tragic moment, but you cross your fingers now and hope that it's maybe a moment of inspiration and learning as Denmark, I guess, kind of, if you can you describe the scene that we saw over the weekend?
Yeah, and do you know what? We were training with the Cavs, and I got a text from my wife, actually, just as I was leaving the pitch. And then as soon as I get home, you know, I look at the highlights, I look at the social media, and I tell you, I was choked up watching it, because that's just, you know, we all care about the games and our jobs and, you know, getting through this COVID. But when it is near life or death, I think it puts everything into great perspective. I mean, credit to the Danes. I mean, how quickly their captain responded, how quickly the medical team, how quickly the referee responded, because, you know, had it not been within those seconds, those pivotal seconds to resuscitate him, you know, we could be mourning the passing of a wonderful person and a wonderful player. So, I mean, let's hope that he's on the road to recovery now. But yes, that, I think you just put it right. It's a learning experience for us all. On the back end of COVID as well, we don't know what's going to transpire from this. And yeah, we've got to be on our best behavior.
Yeah, I mean, just incredible world-class athletes, but still some things go wrong. And you know what it is? Because Christian Eriksen, who had cardiac failure on the pitch, for those that don't know, and it seems like he's doing okay. But the fact that you were able to have to be tested like that and pass the test, because now you can make sure that defibrillators and all of the health, you know, the not restrictions, but just everything that you need in place. You would, of course, double and triple down on that today after something like that happens. But to have been able to save the man's life, literally, the doctor said he was gone, to be able to save his life. And show that you were prepared and ready for such an event is tremendous. So it would have, obviously, it would have been a horrible, horrible story, but it's maybe something, like you say, of inspiration. What else? Here we are. We're now heading into day four. We'll talk about this morning's match here in a bit, but take us through the first few days, just the single match on opening day, but walk through the weekend with us.
Do you know what? I think the opening game was a brilliant tone setter, really. I thought the Italians were good. I thought the Turks tried to contain them for the first half and kept them at bay, but maybe the Turkish coach got a little bit too ahead and tried to think if he could change it and hit them on the counter, and that just opened things up for the Italians. And I thought they were absolutely sublime, really. It was one of the top performers. I know we'd talked about them as the, you know, a bit of an outside bet, but having put that performance in and seeing what the Belgians did as well, you'd put them as contenders now. They've just got to build on from it now.
So the Dutch yesterday were not boring. I was talking about it with some other supporters on the weekend that the old Holland club with the big superstars and all the egos might not have had the will to come back after they watched a 2-0 lead in the second half disappear against Ukraine. But this group did. Maybe if there's a little less skill, maybe there's more cohesiveness with that, with this group. Is that fair?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, because we talked about the loss of Virgil van Dijk, but then you look at the loss of Matthijs de Ligt as well. That's two pivotal centre-halves. But maybe that's right. Maybe the egos have been put aside. I mean, Memphis Depay, like we said, is having a bit of a re-emergence as a top player. But they're young. You know, we forget that in 2019, this was a group. There's a lot of the Ajax players that got them to the semis of the Champions League. So they've got quality there. I mean, you would have thought, you know, a 2-0 lead, they could have held on to it. I think this tournament, always any tournament, has to have a bit of magic when it matters. And you look at what, you know, when they're comfortable, and then Yarmolenko scores that worldie, which up until today, well, it was only yesterday, but up until today was, you know, arguably the goal of the tournament so far, until Patrick Schick, you know, scored against Scotland his second goal today. But I like them. I like Dumfries for the Netherlands. I thought he was pivotal. His assist and his winning goal was important. But, I mean, man, that was probably got a game of the tournament so far, I'd say.
You happy with the English?
Very. First time they've won an opening Euros game. Usually it's a tie or a loss. And, I mean, let's replay it that, you know, 3 years ago this was the World Cup semi-finalist, and Croatia, a good side. You know, they were the World Cup finalists in 2018. A good side. This, you know, linchpin is still Modric. They have changed. I do think England are better, and I don't think Croatia are as strong as that group that got to the finals. But still, you know, I thought we opened well with Phil Foden. I thought he had a decent game. And then tactically got it right, because there's a lot of question marks about playing Trippier, who's predominantly a right back with Atletico Madrid, playing at left back. But, you know, everyone's up in arms thinking why, you know, we've taken, originally they'd taken four right backs to the tournament. Trent Alexander gets injured, but now it shows because he is one of the best 1v1 defenders. So you know, a lot of tactical chess matches here. And I thought, you know, people saying, you know, Raheem Sterling hasn't had a stellar year, but he scored 16 goals for a Premier League championship win inside Man City. I mean, that's not a bad off year. And he scored when it matters. So I think they did well. They just got to build on now because, as you know, Czech are showing now, you know, they're no pushovers. So it's going to be interesting going through to the next round of games.
You mentioned the incredible goal in this morning's game. It is still 2-0 Czech Republic with about 8 minutes before stoppage time. What have your takeaways been between the Scots and the Czechs?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a pretty much a simple, like an easy, you know, matchup because they were both nullifying each other. You know, the Scots were putting in a ton of crosses and not getting on the end of it. And then the Czechs put in a cross and Patrick Schick, who we talked about, I think, on Friday, got on the end of it. And then literally the Scots have come out second half and had a right go at them. The Czech keepers made a ton of good saves. And then, my God, the best goal so far, you know, Patrick Schick's just an opportunist. And he's hit a wonderful strike from just inside the Scots half to make it 2-0. I haven't got my eyes on the screen now, so I think last time we did this, this was a change in goals. But as it stands now, that is goal of the tournament. And you know, they're going to be tough to break down because the Czechs are playing Scotland in Scotland, and then they've got to come to England and play in England. So perhaps they're going to use that as an advantage to them and just, you know, batten down the hatches.
The other matches today, Poland plays Slovakia, Swedes, and Spain. What about Poland and Spain? How is there, just again, I'm just going off of kind of what I'm reading, but there is a bit of love, maybe not to win the whole thing, but just this is a good time for both of these countries.
It is, and I mean, I think we said before, any team that has Robert Lewandowski is your number nine has a chance because the Poles are always extremely organized, tactically disciplined. But they've got a world-class striker, and in these type of events, you need to have that, and they've got it. Don't know too much about the Slovaks, really, to be honest, but any team from you know Eastern Europe are always going to pose a threat because they're very, very tactically disciplined. The Spain, what's always surprised me now with this group is they haven't taken their full 26 quota, and with that, never named any, and it must be the first time in history, no ex-Real Madrid players, or sorry, current Real Madrid players in there.
Wow.
So it's a bizarre one, but they've got, you know, they're on a bit of a rebirth and they do have some, you know, old heads in there and Busquets pivoting the midfield. Koke's just won the La Liga with Atletico Madrid. They've still got a quality side. And then young Pedri, that seems to be the player that everybody's talking about is the next up and comer out of Spain. So I'm looking forward to a 1 o'clock one. I'll have to see the rematch after training of the Poles and the Slovaks. And then tomorrow it's your team, Boom. It's Hungary against Portugal.
Is that what it is? Yeah, that's right.
Starving.
So hungry, yeah.
I think chicken and peri-peri, right? So
yeah, that's right.
It just whets my appetite.
No, Pinder is trying to get me out for France-Germany. Pour a bunch of pints down my throat. I'm very, I'm an impressionable young guy.
Yeah, he is very persuasive.
He is. Yeah, he really is. And I mean,
not a good little spot for any
My self-esteem could use a boost, so who knows. You mentioned the Cavs. How are things with Cavalry?
Good. We're getting into shape. I mean, it's been the longest preseason ever, and I tell you, it's probably the biggest challenge that we've had to get players that haven't played for so long to get together in match fitness. And then we're going to be inundated with games, which we're looking forward to. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, the sun's out now, so anytime the sun's out, we're either training at Spruce Meadows, you know, it just feels great. So for us, we leave on next Monday. We play on Sunday against York United, and every day now matters because it's all geared up to that first game. And then as soon as that first game's done, it's let's recover, let's re-energize, and let's review what we did past. And then we just keep moving because there's only a 2-day turnaround between it. So it's almost like a bit of a tournament start to the season. And we've got a lot of lessons coming back from when we did this with the Island Games. But the difference with now is this is the start of the season, not the whole season. So we've got a few strategies we want to take with us. And we've got a couple more signings that we'll likely make this week to boost the squad. And we're happy with the way the squad looks.
I'd be guessing you don't have to worry about anyone going through the motions. There'll be some serious enthusiasm for a group that's played, what, 10 games over the last 500 or so days?
Massive, isn't it? I think there was a stat that came out by the league. It was, what, 285 days between the 2019 final and the start of the 2020 season. And it's something similar, 280 between the end of the 2020 season and the start of the 2021. So I don't think we've ever experienced anything like it. But I would say it's credit to the league to show this ingenuity as a start-up professional league in what couldn't be a worse time to launch one. We come through the back of that. We've learned some incredible lessons, and every season we've had so far has just been a different season to navigate through. And I tell you, we just can't wait to get back at Spruce Meadows and be in front of our fans. That is a connection that will be electric when that happens.
Tommy, good to talk to you, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the games today. We'll be in touch.
All right. Enjoy the pints in France and Germany tomorrow, mate.
We'll try. Thanks.
Won't be hard. All right.
Bye.